Hey, Jake, how are you?
Good. I am glad to see you venturing into psychology today.
Hey, I embrace truth wherever it can be found.
Yeah, the Milgram experiment. Fascinating. Love it.
Yeah, you know, I was reading a book recently, and they were discussing the experiment. I hadn't read it in a couple of years, but I had remembered kind of the concepts, and reading it kind of prompted me to go back and read some of the background and the implications and everything, and it's really fascinating. You're very familiar with it, but for the benefit of some of your listeners who I'm sure aren't, this was an experiment that was done in July of 1961. This was just 3 months after the start of the trial of the Nazi war criminal Adolf Eichmann in Jerusalem. So back in the early 60s, and this guy was his name was Stanley Milgram. He was a psychologist at the Yale University. And he wanted to try and find out to what extent would people obey authority when that order conflicted with their personal conscience. His main question was driven by the Nazi war crimes. He was wondering, really, was, you know, Eichmann and were his, you know, the fellow Nazis, were they just obeying orders and suppressing their conflicting personal conscience to the extent that that conscience did conflict? Or did they really participate in this? They believed in it. They thought that, you know, mass extermination of people was appropriate and beneficial and all that. And it's really interesting. As you noted earlier, this experiment has been replicated time and time again with scarily consistent results. So what happened was this guy, Stanley Milgram, this psychologist at Yale, he got people to come in to do an experiment, and he had another person there as well who the subject thought was also another subject, when in fact it was a fellow psychologist just playing along and posing. And so in one case, they had in a separate room someone who was hooked up to a shock system that would deliver shocks at various frequencies or intensities. And so what the subject was asked to do was to increasingly administer shocks to the patient, when in fact the patient was just playing along and knew what was going on, and they were in fact being shocked. They were just making increasing noises to try and fake it and help the person on the other side of the room convince them that they were in fact being shocked. Now what happened was there's kind of different variations in how this was done, but there were two main distinctions. And the first, there were two people in this room. The one was the subject, and they had the power to push the button and administer the shock. And the other person was, in the eyes of the subject, was just another person there playing along and role-playing, when in fact it was a psychologist. However, because that psychologist assumed the role of kind of a peer, a fellow subject, when they played along with a script that involved increasing the voltage, increasing the power of the shocks, as the screams got louder, then what happened was the subject began to resist. When the person on the other side of the room was screaming very loudly that they were in pain, that they had heart problems, that they, you know, felt that they were going to die, this person began to resist the instructions of who they thought was a simple peer. That the peer was reading a script and saying, okay, now increase it to this amount and shock them again.
Yeah, I mean, basically what they did for people who to nutshell it, right, is there's this guy who's an actor dressed in a lab coat, so people think he's a doctor. And behind the glass is another guy who's got all these crazy electrodes tied up to a machine that'll shock him. And then there's an assistant. So there's three people, right? And then the assistant is sitting there. The guy in the lab coat tells the assistant, okay, turn up the shocks. And the guy in the back gets shocked. But what people don't realize is that the subject is not the guy in the electrodes. The subject being studied is the guy being told what to do, and how far will he go to jack with this poor fellow tied
That's
up to
exactly
the
right. Yeah. You know, and in the first variant, when they were just thought that they were being told to do this by a peer, they began to resist. However, in the second experiment, when the person was the psychologist who was telling them to increase the voltage, that became an authority figure in the person's eyes. And 66%, it's like 64 to 68, depending on the experiment, but consistently, two-thirds of people will, even when they voice objections, will suppress their conflicting personal conscience and do as they were told by this psychologist who was telling them, no, you need to follow along with the game. This is part of it. They signed up for it. You know, these people would say, well, I'll give my money back. I'll just walk away. I don't need to do it. But two-thirds of people ended up going ahead and administering the full voltage, even up to three times, and even when they objected to doing it, they resisted their conflicting moral code and went ahead and imposed punishment upon someone simply because they were told to do so. These results have been extremely consistent in replications of the study that have been done, and so I think it really proves what Milgram was trying to find out. That is, the people, even when they are ordered to do something and feel compelled to obey, when that something conflicts with their personal conscience, the vast majority of people, two-thirds, will still do it even when they flat-out know it is wrong.
Yeah, this is actually one of those things that I wish more people knew about, because it is bubbling under the surface. It's like so much, right? We're all I think the tyranny largely is tyranny by distraction, right? Like, everybody knows everything about Sookie from New Jersey Shore or whatever, but they don't know anything about the Milgram experiment. And there are guys, I know Peter Gabriel, right? The guy who did, what are all those songs, like Big Time or whatever. He actually did a song called Milgram's 37, talking about the 37 people who would not hurt somebody, that our culture largely relies on those 37 people not going along with just some authority.
Well, I think what's interesting here is to note, not only does it come from authority figures, but it comes from a system that breeds that kind of authoritarianism, right? It's not just, well, I recognize that you're my commanding officer or you're my employer or whatever. It's that there is kind of this culture of authority that people give deference, not just politically or militarily, but in so many other ways as well, to perceived or legitimate authority, that even when that authority compels them, or rather commands them, to do something that they feel is wrong, in so many cases, people will go ahead and comply. And this is something, the 37 is what we need to focus on, as I guess what we need to amplify is to get people to recognize that to the extent they're told to do something they know is wrong, why in the world would you do it?
Yeah, and it all goes to authority, and this is something, a theme in almost every single one of my books that you're touching on today, about the role of authority. And as a hypnotist, I'm well aware of this, that it people just will take commands if there's a situation set up for authority. And in politics, I can't explain Romney, his success in Utah, in any better way than the Milgram experiment.
Yeah, and really it bleeds out, not just politically, not militarily like you're saying, but in almost just, it bleeds through our culture that people, for example, in my faith, LDS, we kind of have a recognized authority, prophets and apostles, and there is leadership. And I think what I attribute the Romney factor to is many people kind of bleed that respect for authority out laterally, whereas, they recognize God, they want to obey God and his messengers, the prophets, whatever. That bleeds laterally into politics, where they see this perceived authority or person who's trying to even become an authority. And they just give, they don't do any due diligence. They don't screw. They don't have any healthy skepticism at all. But they see him as a willing authority that they're trying to kind of impose upon themselves, thus continually surrendering their own sovereign ability to decide for themselves and rationally conclude what issues they will or will not support. They support the man. They support the authority that himself, and then they reap the consequences of everything that goes along with that. And saying, well, Romney, supports this position, therefore I should too, or we need to make this popular because it's part of his platform.
Yeah, this is you're exactly right that this is much bigger than just politics. This really affects people almost unilaterally at every single level. If you don't actually consciously make a decision as to what is an authority in your life and what is not.
Yeah, and in fact, after the break, I want to talk about the military angle, because I read an interesting article a couple weeks ago that it came out about the effect, the consequences of what's happening militarily. We've been overseas for something like a decade now. We've had tons of people die. We've spent gobs of money. We've had all sorts of chaos and unintended consequences over there. And I think it's instructive to note, or to rather observe, what effect the Milgram experiment, the same lessons, how do those apply to the military? How do those apply to the past decade where we're sending soldiers in this kind of culture of authoritarianism and this rigid structure? How does that affect them?
Okay, great. Yeah, this is a wonderful, wonderful topic. We're in the middle of the Boyack Review, guys. Come on back. We're discussing the Milgram experiment and its relationship with liberty. Come on back, guys.
The Voice of Utah. AM 630 K-Talk.
K-Talk.com.
Number one for the most live, local, two-way talk.
All right, guys. Welcome back. Mental Self Defense Radio. I am Jake Shannon. We're speaking with Connor Boyack, Mental Self Defense Radio. This is very apt because, really, it's been since 2009, my anomaly book, where I really went into the Milgram experiment and some of its connections with liberty. And I'm really glad that you're going there now. As I started poking around, it was 37 out of 40 people did these shocks to people, and it's really kind of scary. We did have a caller who was asking about another similar study. If they want to hold, we can talk about it. But they were talking about, there's another one you guys can look up, the Stanford Prison Experiment. Just Google it. It's kind of a similar thing, but more about how people are treated in captivity. It's really a scary experiment. Anyway, Connor, without further ado, you were linking it to command and control organizations like the military, this Milgram's experiment.
Yeah, and before I dive in there, I think this is kind of a good segue between the two. So for those who have just joined, we're talking about the Milgram experiment, the extent to which people will obey authority, that the orders from that authority conflict with their own moral code, their personal conscience. So the guy who, this Yale University psychologist, he did the report or the study in 1961, the original one, and 13 years after that, he wrote an article called The Perils of Obedience. And I want to read just a small segment of what he wrote there because it's an excellent summary of what he found, and then we can go over and apply that and look at how it goes in the military. So this was from his 1974 article. He says that the legal and philosophic aspects of obedience are of enormous importance, but they say very little about how most people behave in concrete situations. I set up a simple experiment at Yale University to test how much pain an ordinary citizen would inflict on another person simply because he was ordered to do so by an experimental scientist. Stark authority was pitted against the subject's strongest moral imperatives against hurting others. And with the subject's ears ringing with the screams of the victims, authority won more often than not. The extreme willingness of adults to go to almost any length on the command of an authority constitutes the chief finding of the study and the fact most urgently demanding explanation. Then he concludes, ordinary people simply doing their jobs and without any particular hostility on their part can become agents in a terrible destructive process. Moreover, even when the destructive effects of their work become patently clear and they are asked to carry out actions incompatible with fundamental standards of morality, relatively few people have the resources needed to resist authority. And I thought that was extremely powerful. Here he's saying that even when people are made to consciously recognize the incongruence between what they are ordered to do and their own personal moral code, they still do it. Very few people have the capacity, have the intestinal fortitude to resist authority and say no. That conflict.
And this is exactly why a guy like Ron Paul or Gary Johnson, these politicians that get this tremendous groundswell, is because they're the three out of the 40 that actually withstood it and did the right thing in the face of immense pressure. And I think this is so relevant, especially on this show, because, you know, obviously my background's financial economics, but because of, my most recent endeavor and my disillusionment with the entire financial system, I've moved more into hypnosis and language and things of that nature. And this is such an important study in that field because it's so seminal. You mentioned the Nazis. The connection here personally for Milgram, I don't know, you may know this, but for those who don't, it actually is the Nazis. His parents, Milgram was a Jew, an American Jew, but his parents were in detention camps in Nazi Germany. And he was just baffled that, you know, your average Joe Schmo could go along with this kind of atrocity. He could not get his head around it. And so, you know, the real genius of Milgram is something in scientific method called experimental design. He was brilliant at coming up with this design of this experiment to test, again, not the person who you thought would be tested, but the actual the participant, how they were doing it. This is really, really important stuff. I got a caller here who wants to talk about the Stanford Prison Experiment, which I think is relevant.
Sure.
Do you mind if we bring him in?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on a sec. Martin in Salt Lake City, welcome.
Yeah, this is Martin. I just wanted to bring that in, people will just obey authority, and then not only obey them, but even when they know they're doing evil things, they'll join them for some reason, and they won't resist them. I don't know, it's just interesting, some of the things that we grow up with, and I was speaking with one doctor, and he was telling us this is the way we're bred, because if you didn't stick with the Klan, well, you were ousted or killed, and so we're kind of, obedience is bred into us.
I think there's a part of that. I think that doctors in particular are the culprits, by and large. This is why so much of the emphasis on my show, now, most people who are new to liberty are fixated on economics and politics, and that's fine. But I think that there's when you get a deeper appreciation, like what Connor's bringing up here, that it happens everywhere. This is why I rail on the subject of iatrogenesis, death by doctor. It's the third leading cause of death in the United States, and the Milgram experiment explains it, because people abscond any kind of responsibility for their own health just when a guy in a lab coat tells them, and it's killing 220,000 Americans every single year. That's more than happened in one instant in 9/11. It was a fraction of that, and yet every single year that's happening, and it's like nobody cares. It's the most mind-boggling thing from me as a libertarian perspective. Anyway, this is such a deep and rich subject, and this is why I like Thomas Sawes, is that Thomas Sawes is looking at psychiatry as another instrument of the state, much like economics is and law, but psychiatry and psychology and medicine can be just as dangerous, if not more.
I'd like you both to consider. I'm having a big fight with my friend on Facebook about he comes out and says that atheists and agnostics, whatever, atheists don't have any basis for morality. In other words, you know, without a God, you can't say that you're that you have a base where your morality comes from.
Yeah, and he just hasn't thought about it very deeply, because the golden rule is there's not a monopoly on the golden rule with Christians. I mean,
exactly.
Jews have it, Muslims have it, Hindus, atheists, agnostics, Buddhists, everybody's got it.
Right. I mean, love became, you know, before we knew about religion. And even animals will do moral things. So, you know, and they have no concept of religion as far as I know. So what?
You're totally right. And I hate to do this, but we got another caller and we're running out of time. Maybe another show. I appreciate it, Martin. Don't be a stranger. We've got Richard, who actually, this is, I think, relevant, Connor, because the caller before you called in was talking about this no idling ban.
Mm-hmm.
And he was mad at the bank for complying. But this actually kind of speaks to that issue, right? Because the bank did put up the sign. They did kowtow to authority. So let's talk to Richard here, if I can bring him in. Hey, Richard.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Thanks for holding. I know you held for a while.
Oh, no problem. The guy complaining about the anti-idling, the signs, they would have been put, if they were in Salt Lake City, they were put up due to bowing to the authority of Salt Lake City. Mayor Becker and the city council passed an anti-idling ordinance that if you idled for more than a certain length of time, you would be subject to fine. If you fail to pay the fine, then, of course, they throw you in jail if you try to leave the jail.
Well, let's speak to this in a broader issue, okay? I mean, because, Connor, I think you would agree. Obviously, the Milgram experiment shows that it for tyranny to take place, it requires compliance, and that's kind of what Milgram is about, right?
Well, I think there's also something interesting to observe here is the extent to which we kind of attack our peers who do not obey authority in the same way that we do. For example, one business who is told to, you know, whether put a sign up or what have you, and they obey with the authority, and then they see someone else who they feel should be subject to that same authority who is resisting, for example. And, you know, we tie this over to the military. You see conscientious objectors, for example, people who believe that what they're being ordered to do in the military, that, you know, they are affirming explicitly that this conflicts with my religion or my moral code or what have you, and they are resisting. Oftentimes, they are shunned and scorned by fellow members of the military who believe in the cause, who think that they're doing something wrong, and not always, you know, clearly in that kind of tight-knit brotherhood, there's plenty of room for understanding different things and making different decisions. But when you see people who obey authority, and then you look at those who defy authority, it's really interesting to observe in the dynamics between the two, how they respond to one another, how people who feel compelled to obey authority treat those who are outright defiant. I mean, we look at, you know, just conservatives and libertarians generally, and libertarians are consistently railing against the system and saying that the state is tyranny and taxes are theft and all this stuff. And you see just the squirminess, the discomfort that gives people who feel that the authority is legitimate, or feel that because they are compelled to obey, therefore we must be as well, and we must like it and put up with it and love it.
Yeah, I think the government's it's not just us that are awake to the Milgram experiment. I think the government is too, because think about this. This is really where Thoreau had already kind of beat Milgram, not necessarily to the problem, but to the punch, right, with civil disobedience. And I think what they do, this is like what you find with guys like Wesley Snipes or whatever, they make a huge example out of one person, then everybody's afraid to stick their necks out.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we could somehow get a critical mass, like Gandhi or like what Ron Paul's able to do, that's where we're really going to be able to affect change, I think, in a big, big way with regards to this crazy obedience stuff.
Yeah, you know, and I think civil disobedience is important, though really when we call it civil disobedience, yes, you're being disobedient, you're defying it, but if the authority itself is illegitimate, if the law is unjust or unconstitutional, then it's not real civil disobedience. It's not just that you don't like a law and you're going to resist. I talk about this in my book, Latter-day Liberty, in a whole chapter, talking about instances that are praiseworthy, that we all agree are important, you know, resistance to the law. I give one example for fellow members of the LDS Church, where Joseph Smith, the founding prophet, with six other leaders of the church were being held in custody on totally trumped-up charges. I mean, this happened dozens of times. They were always trying to persecute Joseph Smith. And so this one guy named Alexander Doniphan was given an authority by his commanding officer, his superior, a general, to execute Joseph Smith and the other leaders of the church the following day who were being held in custody. So Alexander Doniphan replies, and it's recorded this way. He says, "It is cold-blooded murder. I will not obey your order. If you execute these men, I will hold you personally responsible before an earthly tribunal. So help me God." Where do we see that today, right? I mean, there's Latter-day Saints. We praise this guy because, of course, our, you know, prophet was not executed, and he went on living for, you know, until he was later martyred.
Where we see that is Bradley Manning, and we lock him away without a trial.
Right, right. And so the same people who praise in one case the defiance of an illegitimate command, military command even, in other cases totally support locking some guy up who has not victimized anyone, who has done something that is just and has exposed, you know, criminal activity and corruption, that incongruence, that inconsistency really speaks to the heart of the Milgram experiment, and that is that people feel really conflicted with authority, and as Milgram said in that 1974 article, they don't have the capacity, they don't have the ability to resist those conflicting authoritarian commands in every case when that conflicts their underlying moral code.
And it's with tragic consequences that this is such a hard thing, and this is where this fine line between also the conscious and the unconscious, you know, this is such a deep issue for people who care about liberty as to where does responsibility start, you know?
Right. Well, and I feel especially troubled, yeah, Jake, for those who are in the military. You know, I read this article, as I mentioned, a couple of weeks ago in the New York Times, talking about the suicide rate of veterans from these wars that are going on in the Middle East, that on average about every day and a half, an American soldier dies in combat or through injuries related to combat because of the wars over there. One per day and a half, and that's a lot. But then what was really astounding was the statistics that followed, that veterans kill themselves at a rate of one of every 80 minutes. More than 6,500 veteran suicides are logged every single year. And so I've been pondering that and trying to figure out why that is, and they attribute it to possible brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder, but I feel that PTSD has become kind of this general label. I think, based on soldiers I've talked to, based on stories I've heard, just my personal opinion, that at least in many cases, it is because they are being put into an environment where they're consistently having to suppress their moral code and do things that they know deep down, even if subconsciously, are wrong, that they're killing the wrong
people. Can I weigh in on that one with the military suicide?
You may not, because we're out of time. I wish we could, Richard, but we can pick this up. We can pick this up next week. Hey, I really appreciate the call, Richard. Please don't be a stranger. We're out of time. Connor, yeah, brilliant concept. I'm hoping people... you know, this show is all about liberty advocacy and liberty-minded people and the ideas of liberty. I hope people get their head out of some finance and politics books and look into these other very big, maybe even bigger than politics and finance and whatnot. Connor, great subject. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right. Guys.